You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Andy Borowitz, in for Leonard Lopate. Michelle Zakheim's latest novel, Last Train to Paris, is the story of an American journalist in Europe during the rise of the Third Reich. Rose Mannin's ambitions as a reporter bring her from Nevada to New York, Paris, and on to Berlin. During a time of political upheaval and uncertainty, Rose must deal with the kidnapping of her Jewish cousin, the imminent threat to friends and family, and her own religious identity. This is Michelle Zakheim's fourth book, and it's published by Europa Editions. And I'm so pleased it brings Michelle Zakheim to our show. Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you.
Now, you know, when I usually think of historical fiction, I think of somebody, an author has a particular passion for an era, and you know, he or she does a lot of research and then comes up with a story. But this book came about in a different way because you actually have a personal connection to the story. Can you describe how you came upon this story and how it developed from there?
Sure. I was researching, just being snoopy, and I came across a book of essays by Janet Flanner. And she had written an essay for The New Yorker in 1937 or 38, and I was reading it, and all of a sudden the name Zakheim popped up. And it's not a particularly normal, name. You don't see it very often.
So you weren't Googling your last
name?
No,
this was a long time ago. This was actually in a library.
Oh,
with
wow.
A real book.
Wow.
and so I was fascinated by it. It was a story about this woman being murdered by this man that they called the Handsome Devil in Paris in 1937. And her aunt, Ida Zakheim, who owned a Buttons and Notions shop in Brooklyn, and it was wonderful. But I copied it and put it away.
Mm-hmm.
And then years later, I went back to it and I started researching, and it got more and more and more interesting. And I thought that I would write a historical nonfiction,
right,
about the whole event, but it changed. Mm-hmm. Because I started writing it in a male voice as a man. Reporter reporting on the case itself, and then I finished that and I made it in third person, and I got in all of the stuff about the murder and all of the things about the man being arrested, Eugene Weidman being arrested, who was the Handsome Devil, and it kept growing and growing. But when I turned it in to Europa and they took it, I worried about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't feel it was right.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote to Kent Carroll, who's the publisher of Europa, and I said, may I please have it back? I can't do it. So I got it back, and I transferred it into a woman's voice who became much more alive to me, and the story then evolved to be a much larger story and a novel.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the heroine of the book, Rose. What can you tell us about her?
Well, Rose is an oddball. She comes from a small town in Nevada. Her mother was a Jew. Her father was a Catholic. She was raised in a totally secular situation and couldn't wait to get out, and had a very, very difficult mother, which was one of the main reasons that she needed to get out. So she works at the Territorial Enterprise, which is in Virginia City, Nevada, where Mark Twain worked. And so he becomes her mentor in her own way. And she goes to New York as a writer, and then from there she goes to Paris. She's a very articulate, very bright woman, very curious, and she's also extremely confused about who she is.
Mm-hmm. Because of her background. How common or unusual was it for a woman to be a foreign correspondent?
It was very unusual.
Yeah.
I mean, there was Martha Gellhorn. There were, you know, there were three or four well-known journalists, but these women had a hard time. They had a hard time working. They had a hard time being accepted, just like Rose.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of the novel, it's a retrospective novel. She's looking back on her life.
That's correct, yes.
And a lot of the novel takes place in the years leading up to World War II. And she's in her job as a reporter, she's covering public meetings between Hitler and Mussolini, and German press conferences and activities in the streets of Berlin as she's writing for a newspaper. What sources did you use when you were doing research to get all that right?
Oh, I'm very good at research.
You are. Well, it shows. But...
I love doing research because I can visualize it. So I read everything I could get my hands on. I saw movies. I saw documentaries. And I used my imagination.
Mm-hmm. Would you ever, in your process, if you had an idea that you thought would be great, you know, the novelist part of you thought would be great, the imaginative part of you thought would be great, but there was research that would sort of slap you out of it and say, no, that wouldn't actually have happened. Was that a crushing moment, or would you like you like to work with the reality?
I just lied. I would change
it. Okay, that's the beauty of writing a novel.
Exactly. That's why I went back to writing the novel.
Now, Rose at one point is talking about her job as a reporter during this era, and she says, censorship sliced out the real news. Press conferences were a joke. We were being fed propaganda, and we all knew it. How did Germany control the international news during that era?
Oh, they controlled it in exactly that way, in the sense that anything that was sent by wire was controlled by them. It was hard to sneak news out, but they did. I mean, people carried it back and forth on trains. I mean, there was that kind of movement of information. But the government, the Nazi government, were very, very, very powerful when it came to the newspaper people. It was very hard for them.
Mm-hmm. I'm Andy Borowitz in for Leonard Lopate, and I'm talking to novelist Michelle Zackheim about her new book, Last Train to Paris, which just came out a day or two ago.
Yes, it did, on Tuesday.
What was the view? You know, now it's very easy for us with hindsight to see the Third Reich and Hitler in one way. But this is really before – this was during his rise and during the rise of the Third Reich. What was the view of the world? What was their attitude toward – I know it varied from country to country, but what did people think of Hitler during this earlier time?
I think that everybody had a different opinion. I mean, the French, the intelligentsia had one type of an opinion. The right had another type of an opinion. I mean, it varied. But Paris in particular was filled with Nazi soldiers before the war started. And they were sort of getting people used to the idea that they were going to invade, I suppose.
Now, Rose in the book, this is a love story. It's a murder story, but it's also a love story. And she falls in love with Leon Wolf, who's mm-hmm. a German Jewish engraver. How did they meet?
They met in a bar, which was where all journalists hung out, especially journalists, the European and American journalists hung out in Berlin, and they met there and started a conversation, and from there, this very strange relationship was developed.
Did you find his character difficult to write? Is it harder to write in a male voice for you, what's your approach like?
Yes, it was hard. I mean, that's one of the reasons I took the book back, because I didn't feel I had succeeded. But in writing Leon's voice, because he was not the main character, I didn't have a hard time. He was an artist, and he was interested in a Jew, and interested in what was going on, and very, very left-wing. So he was easy for me.
Now, he has I guess what you would call a complex relationship with the Nazi, Gerard, who oversees his work. How does that relationship change as the war progresses?
It's a good question. I like Gerard. He was my attempt to show that the entire German population were not devils. He tried, and he tried to help Leon as time went on and to help Rose. He was in a very difficult place, but because he was an artist, I think he had more sympathy for Leon.
Mm-hmm. Now, she at a pretty pivotal point in the story, she reports on Kristallnacht, and she is, of course, half Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
Why is she not more afraid for her own safety during this period? Is it because of her confused identity, or is she just a fearless person?
I just think that she ignored it.
Mm-hmm.
She just pretended it didn't exist. She had no idea how to live with the idea of being Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until Kristallnacht, and it wasn't until falling in love with Leon and then beginning to see the horrors that she began to understand that who she was and what she had to do.
Mm-hmm. And there was an an evacuation of Americans after Kristallnacht. What were the actual facts behind that? Was there a last train to Paris? Almost.
They did cut off transportation. It was harder and harder to move about, and after that, that train was one of the last.
Mm-hmm. Now you follow her back to Paris, and she attends the trial of the German man accused of murdering her cousin Stella. So this is where you take off from your real life story, and there you do something kind of interesting because you show her forming relationships with not just Janet Flanner, who of course is your source, but also the writer Colette.
Mm-hmm.
Was this a dangerous choice to insert these real historical characters into the book? You know, you're now sort of blending your fictional characters with real people. Was it a tricky thing? Because you have to, of course, feel like your creations are one thing. You can make them do what you want, but these are real people. Was that a challenge for you? Was it fun to do?
I thought it was fun. I love the idea that my, you know, people that I know were friends of theirs and they could have discussions. And some of their dialogue was actually straight on. I took it right from the books, from the sources.
Mm-hmm. What appealed to you about Colette as a character?
Well, she was such a wonderful, strange, independent woman. And at that time, she was doing everything. She was writing news stories. She was writing books. She was, I think, even writing plays. That she was all over the place. And for a woman at that time to meet somebody like Colette, can you imagine?
Mm-hmm.
It must have been incredible.
One thing that occurs to me about in reading your book, because you're telling this very, it's a new story. It's a story that we haven't seen before. But there's been so much written about this era, both fictionally and in nonfiction. Is that a difficult thing as a novelist to approach a field that's been so sort of well plowed, and you're trying to find a new way of looking at it? Did you read other historical novels set in this period? Did you try to differentiate yourself from that, or was it just taking this story and making it live?
I didn't read other novels. I really tried to start from scratch, really addressing the issue of the elderly, an elderly woman, and how she was looking back in her at her life. And
She's 85 when she's looking back.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and how it develops, how her life has developed, and how she can actually see the truth.
Mm-hmm.
It had the other part of it is not as important.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was reading in your biographical information. I was interested to see that you began as a visual artist.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your career as a visual artist. And I usually think of people being visual and nonverbal, but you're both verbal and visual. What was the visual art part of your career all about?
Half my life, actually.
Right.
You know, I was an installation artist. I did large woodblock prints. I had exhibitions. I did a big project called the Tent of Meeting that showed it opened actually at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine here in New York. But the more time went on, the more words there were, and a lot of poetry, a lot of sort of four-line haikus.
So you included text in your work?
Yes, I did more and more. And one night, my husband, Charlie, and I were sitting in a bar, and I was complaining about writing and what should I do? And he said, well, gosh, just do it already.
Mm-hmm.
So I the challenge was there, and that's when I started writing the book about Violette Leduc. And I did the whole book by hand.
This is your first book?
My first book was called Violette's Embrace.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole book was written by hand with purple ink. And it was a very physical action on my part, but it helped me bridge going into towards language.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking to Michelle Zackheim. Her new book is called Last Train to Paris. It's a historical novel that's set in Europe in the years leading up to the war, the rise of the Third Reich, Hitler and the Third Reich. I'm Andy Borowitz in for Leonard Lopate at WNYC and WNYC.org. It's a fascinating book and great job. Do you have any plans for your next project?
I do.
That's all I'm going to get out of you?
That's right.
Okay. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. I've been speaking with Michelle Zakheim about her novel, The Last Train to Paris. It's published by Europa Editions, and Michelle will be reading and signing books tonight at 7:30 at Greenlight Bookstore. That's at 686 Fulton Street in Brooklyn. And she'll be reading and signing books on Wednesday, January 15th at 7:30.
No, January 14th.
Tuesday. Oh, that's been changed.
Yes.
Tuesday, January 14th. We'll make sure to update that on our show page.
Okay.
At 7:30 at Three Lives.
At 7 o'clock.
Good
Sorry.
God. Good God. Well, you are a stickler for accuracy.
Sorry
so
about that.
Anything else you'd like to change?
No.
Is my name Andy Borowitz?
I don't know.
Okay. It's Tuesday, January 14th at 7 o'clock. Okay, now I'm afraid to read the rest of this.
No, keep going. I'll keep correcting if I have to.
At Three Lives & Co., is that correct?
Yes.
At 154 West 10th Street.
Correct.
Correct. Okay. For more information, visit our show page. Michelle, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank
Good
you
luck.
Very much. Thank you.